All right, thank you. You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 9 a.m. Stay tuned next for One Land, Many Voices, coming up next, right after these announcements.
I hate a song that makes you think that you're not any good. I hate a song that makes you think you're just born to lose, bound to lose. No good to nobody, no good for nothing. Because you're either too old or too young or too fat or too thin or too ugly or too this or too that.
Folk music is one of the first social media communicating news of social import. It still does so today. Join me, Don Jacobson, on Friday, October 25th, 12 noon to 1:30, for Sing Me a Song of Social Significance. From Woody Guthrie to Cy Conn, you'll hear songs that are meaningful to your lives, songs that are inspiring, and songs that are just fun to listen to. Cy Conn and David Rovick's CDs will be available as thank you gifts for your pledge. 12 noon to 1:30, Friday, October 25th, only on KBOO.
Was a track titled In the Silence of the Night from the album Ala Fan by the Palestinian musical group Sabrin. My name is Zaha Hassan.
And I'm Ned Roche. And this morning on One Land, Many Voices, we have an amazing guest. Leila El Haddad is the co-author of the highly acclaimed cookbook The Gaza Kitchen, A Palestinian Culinary Journey. The Gaza Kitchen is part ethnography, part cookbook, and part political analysis, exploring the distinctive cuisine and food heritage of Palestine's Gaza district through the personal stories and history of its people, particularly its women. Featured recently on CNN's Parts Unknown with Anthony Bourdain, Leila points to the challenges facing Gazans living under military siege while introducing the culture and beauty of the region and its people to viewers. Leila is a blogger, political analyst, and writer of the award-winning blog Gaza Mom. Her book, Gaza Mom, Palestine, Politics, Parenting, and Everything in Between, takes us into the life and world of a busy Palestinian journalist who's both covering the story of Gaza and living it very intensely. Leila, welcome to One Land, Many Voices.
Thank you, Ned. It's a pleasure to be here.
So in the Gaza Kitchen, you movingly weave in and out of the recipes narratives of the people you met. You've said that when the Palestinian story is told, it's often told by others, and all too often Palestinians are portrayed as either innocent, helpless victims or as fanatical terrorists, and that your writing is a way to take ownership of the storytelling. Leila, what's the story that you want to tell?
Yeah, you said it, Ned. It's often the images we're seeing of Gaza are very caricatured images. Images that Palestinians themselves don't recognize. Either we have the masked gunmen or the women who are crying, or the all these kinds of things that we associate with Gaza, the poverty and the unemployment. But there's so much more, and you learn about that so much more as you enter the realm of the the private domain and that very intimate space of the kitchen, and you have these conversations with, and not just women, obviously, as we learn, there's certain areas in Gaza where it's the men who actually do the cooking, or they do it together. But anyway, you suddenly privy to all these conversations and human voices and faces that we like to say, when you enter that domain, when you have these conversations, when you then see Palestinians as more human and understand them as human and not as abstractions, it becomes more difficult to support policies that intend to harm them. And that's part of the story that we wanted to tell. But then also the unknown story of their history, the lost history of this. I'm sorry, that's my baby out there. But the history of the many hundreds of Palestinian towns and villages that were destroyed and depopulated by Jewish militias prior to 1948, you know, militias that would then be come later, the IDF, the Israeli occupation forces, and no longer exist on a map, but certainly exist in people's memories in their narratives and in the foods that they eat, as we learned, with these very distinct regional variations present. Incredible. In areas small as Gaza, we discovered that there's certain dishes that somebody will make, you know, a refugee, say, from the village of Beit Tima, living in the Deir el-Balah refugee camp in central Gaza, would make a dish a certain way, like a fermented wheat stew, kishik, that somebody in Gaza City would have no idea how to make. So that was really interesting to us, that you can kind of, in a sort of ghost archaeology kind of way, you can uncover and learn about Palestinian past that is still very much forms part of the present through the food. So those are some of the stories we wanted to tell. The stories of the refugees and the Palestinians who make up something like 80% of the current population of the modern-day Gaza Strip, to tell their stories and the story of this Palestinian past. But also the modern day, the current day story, what is the situation in Gaza now? What is the of the blockade? What is, how do people manage and cope, and how do they endure despite all of this? These are the stories we wanted to share.
Layla, you've received some really great reviews from some top-notch chefs and connoisseurs of Mediterranean food, including Claudia Rodin and Anthony Bourdain. But the review that I think really captures the uniqueness of this book that you co-authored with Maggie Schmidt is from former Slow Food president Josh Vertel. He says, "I have never seen a cookbook like the Gaza Kitchen, and that is a shame because this is exactly as a cookbook should be. It is a guide to knowing a place, its tastes, its ecology, its struggles, and its spirit through the food that people share there. It has changed how I cook, and it has filled me with respect for the ways in which food traditions create power and resilience in the face of adversity." When you wrote the book, did you anticipate that foodies and chefs would appreciate it as much as those interested in the political conflict in Israel-Palestine?
No, I mean, I would have to say we didn't. It was there was a moment when we didn't even think the book would happen. I mean, it was really difficult. We started off as a two-woman operation on a $6,000 Kickstarter budget in 2010, and before that, it was just an idea that I had had, and then, you know, Maggie herself, a longtime researcher, writer, activist, had been to Gaza and then emailed me saying after a visit that she was interested in, she was writing something about exploring the foods of the region, and she had come across my name because there was virtually nothing written on this subject except some things that I had written. And, you know, and I said, oh, that's funny that you should email me because I've always been interested but kind of needed a partner in crime. And so it started with that simple email and that idea, and with the borders were closed, and so we couldn't even get to Gaza, and it took us about a year until the Rafah crossing, the only land route into Gaza, opened, and we were able to get in, and then spent about 6 weeks, like I said, just spanning the entire Gaza Strip from morning to evening, following leads and so on, and on this very minuscule budget. And then from that point until the point it was actually published was 3 years, where we had to go through our research and find a publisher and, you know, find interested parties to help promote it. So no, we definitely, when I think about that, you know, the initial idea that we had and where it's come, it's really some quite remarkable. And it's very promising, I think. It tells us that our initial intuition was correct. And, you know, that intuition was, if we could use, kind of get people in the back door, use food as a means to explore the situation and the history, the politics, and the people, that it would be, as somebody called it, a subversive tactic, you know, but in so doing, obviously also celebrating this amazing heritage, you know, in its own right. So it's been quite a pleasure and a pleasant surprise, obviously. I mean, that I don't think we would have expected in our wildest dreams to have gotten praise from the people that you mentioned, including Anthony Bourdain. So
this is One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. I am Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche, and joining us from Columbia, Maryland, is Layla El-Haddad, author of the highly acclaimed book, The Gaza Kitchen. We are going to take a short break so that you can hear from our friends at KBOO about how you can support One Land Many Voices and the station's first-rate programming. You're also going to hear about how you can get a copy of Leila El-Haddad's book with your pledge of support.
Thanks. We are here at Membership Central, and I want to send a special message out to the procrastinators that are listening. You've been hearing us call for your support. This is the last day to support public affairs programming on KBOO. So if you've been putting it off, now is the time to pick up your phone and support KBOO Community Radio. You can do that right now by pressing in those numbers, 877-500-5266. If you're a regular listener, you've heard us say those numbers quite a lot in the last couple of weeks, so you probably have them on speed dial by now. So just press that, 877-500-KBOO, and you can pick up a copy of Leila El-Haddad's book, The Gaza Kitchen, and use that for cooking. We heard the baby in the background. I have my baby with me. If you're a mom too, if you're in your kitchen trying to think of what to cook today, get this cookbook. It's amazing food from the Gaza Strip. That's a $60 minimum pledge, and that can come out of your checking account, $5 a month. We have a lot of other thank you gifts that you can get for that $5 a month minimum contribution. Now is the time to do it. You've been putting it off, so go ahead and do it. We want to thank everyone who has donated so far during this drive. Today is your last day to support public affairs programming on KBOO. 877-500-5266.
And what a great idea to write a cookbook about the culture, history, and politics of an area. It's so important. Food, as we know, is what brings people together and is what creates so much meaning in our lives. And you can pick up a copy of this book for only $5 a month. You can call now at 877-500-526 and support the community culture of KBOO. We are always making connections to the agriculture in our community, to the other environmental groups in our community. We are very bonded to the food issue here at KBOO, and you will hear a lot about what's going on in our community every day on our public affairs programming. This is your last time to be able to support it on KBOO, so pick up the phone and make a call now, 877-500-5266.
I'm Jenka, and I'm here with Jen Davis, one of our volunteers and board members, and Jen's been putting in a tireless amount of work trying to make some flyers. We have an upcoming KBOO benefit, KPFA on the air. She's been working on that. It is the origins of community radio, and you can also get a pair of tickets to see that on November 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater if you give a $60 contribution to KBOO. We have $500 to raise during this hour. I think we can do it. We just need five of you giving $100 a year. Our basic membership is $40, and the low-income membership is $20. But if you give $60 or above, then you get a thank you gift. And it sounds like a lot, $60, but when you think about it, $5 a month is really not a lot. All of that adds up to KBOO's annual budget. $120,000 is our goal. We're within $30,000 of it. Let's do it. 877-500-5266.
You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. I am Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche, and joining us from Columbia, Maryland is Leila El-Haddad, author of the highly acclaimed book, The Gaza Kitchen.
Leila, when you think about the people in Gaza who invited you into their kitchens to share their recipes and their food and their warmth, is there a particular person or experience that stands out?
Boy, that's a tough one. I mean, we just were continuously overwhelmed with people's generosity and hospitality there. You know, people whose circumstances might not necessarily allow for them to host and cook and so on. It's incredible. Every one of the people that we met, including the women in the cooking co-op called the Zaytun Kitchen, they were particularly welcoming and kind of awed us with their ability to literally cook up a storm in a tiny little room, no bigger than maybe 8 by 12, no fan or vent, no circulation. Absolutely incredible. I mean, and this is to me when people talk about, you know, well, where is the Palestinian Gandhi? Where is the Palestinian nonviolent resistance? We like to think of these women as representative of kind of the daily continuous struggle. against apartheid and occupation that you don't always hear about and don't always make the news. Another woman that we met in southern Gaza, her name was Sultan, and she is a great example of a Palestinian family who became refugees. So they were dispossessed of their land, and they were farmers in Yaffa prior to 1948, and then became refugees in Gaza. And then her uncle was able to actually return to his farm ways. He was able to purchase a small piece of land, and he taught her how to farm. And this is something quite remarkable. It might seem like common sense, but it wasn't, because most people weren't able to do that. They were in complete tatters and weren't able to, you know, had nothing saved up. And so making that transition and then teaching his niece how to farm. And then so she became kind of the matriarch of the family. And then she lost that farm too. The Israelis raided it in 2003 along Gaza's eastern borders, but again was able to rent out something else and continuing. She has a farm that sustains her and her family and children and grandchildren, and then she also employs, you know, workers to pick the chili peppers seasonally. So it's quite incredible because she's providing employment. She's, you know, they're completely self-sufficient in terms of they're able to, you know, everything they have there, they use their meat, the dairy, the vegetables. And she's also an incredible cook and, you know, a very inspiring, jubilant family. So,
you know, one of the unfortunate things about interviewing you, Layla, on radio is that we can't share with the listeners the real beauty of your book, the amazing pictures that go along with the stories and the recipes mm-hmm. that you have in there. Could you, you know, talk to us about one of your most surprising recipes that you found? Because, you know, Mediterranean food, I mean, there's a lot of commonalities between different regions, countries, and, you know, different ethnic groups in terms of the mm-hmm. food, like mm-hmm. falafel you might find anywhere, hummus. But you really have quite an interesting selection of food that I've never seen before as a Palestinian from the West Bank. You know, I've never heard of some of these things, and they're so amazing. Mm-hmm. Could you pick out one of your most favorite and surprising recipes that you found and try to give us mouth-watering detail about how it's prepared so our listeners can sort of appreciate?
I think I'm going to grab my book to look through it as I'm talking to you. But, you know, you kind of honed in on something very important, which was the distinctiveness of the cuisine of the Gaza region. Something that I recognized very early on as a child, you know, growing up in diaspora, my parents used to work in the Gulf and Saudi Arabia and then Kuwait. And I always noticed that very thing, that our Palestinian counterparts from other areas of Palestine were not familiar with the dishes that we would make, highly unusual dishes like rumania, this sour pomegranate and lentil stew, you know, there's a variety of others. But that was my initial, you know, aha moment where that led me to kind of be interested in writing a book about this and why that was, you know, why, you know, and it's partly because Gaza has been subject to closure and blockade for so long, right, that there hasn't been kind of an exchange. And partly
really, I mean, I've traveled around the Middle East, and I have to say that some of these recipes I've never seen anywhere, you know, anywhere,
right.
Whether Egypt or Jordan. Or So it is very unique what you have with recipes in this book.
No, you're absolutely right. And, I mean, like we say in the book, there is a reason for that. Just because Gaza has been subject to closure and blockade, not just in the most current circumstances, but for far longer than we, you know, would like, right, for decades. That has partly to do with it, that there hasn't been kind of this natural exchange of recipes and so on. And people really do hold on very dearly to the specificity of a lot of these recipes because it's, look, the only thing left of their homes in many cases. But, I'm trying to think of a couple of good examples. I mean, this is certainly one of them, the one that I just mentioned, rumania. It's a sour lentil and eggplant stew, and it's not quite a stew in the kind of Western sense of a stew. We couldn't figure out exactly how to. There's a lot of these, what we call one bowl meals, in Gaza. So they're things that are cooked up, and then poured into bowls and kind of allowed to cool and eaten at room temperature, with bread. And, this one is made actually just around now. It's in season, end of summer, beginning of fall, and it's made with the juice of the sour pomegranate tree, which, as I would discover, is also known as the white Babylonian pomegranate. It's a different variety of pomegranate, And the exterior of the pomegranate is green, it's pistachio green, it's not red, and the and it's pressed for its juices and often made into pomegranate molasses or used in recipes like this because it lends a unique sourness to the dish. And we substitute pomegranate molasses because it's, I would imagine, pretty difficult to find that variety of tree. It's a coastal tree that grows in sandy soils, just like those in Gaza. And this dish was also really well known in other areas of southern historic Palestine, such as Yaffa and Lydd also. They call it a different name. And it's a vegetarian dish, which is also, you know, people get really excited about that because traditionally a lot of the most well-known Middle Eastern recipes involve meat, so.
Yeah. This is One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. I am Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche. And joining us from Columbia, Maryland, is Leila El-Haddad, author of the highly acclaimed book, The Gaza Kitchen. We are going to take a short break so you can hear from our friends at KBOO about how you can support One Land, Many Voices and the station's first-rate programming. You're also going to hear from our friends about how you can get a copy of Leila's book with your pledge of support.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Jen Davis. I'm here with Jenka, and we are excited to bring to you this really interesting program. I mean, how important is that, making a cookbook with all the politics and culture of a region? That makes so much sense. We know that the kitchen is where so much of important things that happen in our community are going on. And right here at KBOO, we are connected to you in your kitchen, at your work, wherever you are. You can tune in and get all the news about what's going on in your community. You get this is fantastic public affairs program, and this is your last chance today to support the public affairs program that you depend on every day. So call 877-505-266 or go to kboo.fm.
It's really easy to do. Again, that phone number is 877-500-5266. If say you're driving or you're on your bike and you need to keep that in your head for a few minutes, it's 877-500-KBOO. When you get a chance, pull over, give that call, and make that commitment to community radio. You know, making a monthly deduction is the most popular way that KBOO supporters give to the station. That's $5 or $10 a month. If you value what you hear on KBOO, the volunteer-powered, volunteer-driven station, you're hearing Ned Rush and Zaha producing this show. They do that as volunteers. All of the voices that you hear on the air are volunteers. We have a very small paid staff and a huge group of music lovers, news, and public affairs producers, all volunteers from the community, sharing the types of programming that is left out on the mainstream media. Right now, we have a homogenization of media that is unprecedented in this country. Community radio has never been more important. Now is the time. It's your last chance to give during this membership drive to support public affairs programming on KBOO. It's so important that you do make that call. Whether you can give $5 a month, $10 a month, maybe you're somebody who could give $20 or $30 a month and make that type of commitment to this community radio station. Think about what is doable for you and call 877-500-5266. Membership drive donations. This membership drive that we're doing right now, calling on you, the listener, to call up and become a member, accounts for about 60% of all individual giving to KBOO. And then all of our funding is from the local community, from monthly deductions, from individuals giving us maybe that $60, that $90 a year. Some people give $500 a year. If that's doable for you, go ahead and make that call now. Whatever amount you can give, all of that comes in together into the large pool, and we stir it up and we make community radio. 877-500-5266. Join the melting pot of community radio right now.
And if you call now, you can get a copy as a thank you gift of this fantastic book, The Gaza Kitchen. The Gaza Kitchen is published by Just World Books, timely books for changing times. You can learn more about the books and all Just World Books at this website, just www.justworldbooks.com. This book is about the Gaza and all of the politics and culture heritage of this region as told through a cookbook with recipes. That is a really fascinating, interesting, and innovative way to tell the history of a region, and it makes so much sense to me as someone who grows a lot of food and cooks a lot of food in the community. You can pick up a copy too right now for only $5 a month. Call 877-500-5266.
And even if you're not a chef, just getting this book to learn about the history and culture of Gaza is worthwhile. Leila El-Haddad is a great writer. She is a reporter, a journalist herself. I read her previous book, Raising Khaled. It's amazing, raising a child in this war zone and talking about the daily life struggles as a mom. 877-500-5266. And you can pick up a copy of this and say yes to community radio. Say yes to programming that is controversial, that is a neglected perspective, that is serving the underserved in your community. Whatever you can give is appreciated. Whether it's a $60 a year contribution to pick up this book or one of our other thank you gifts, whether it's a $500 a year contribution, or maybe you could do the $20 low income membership. If you're under 21, you could do a $10 youth membership. Whatever you're able to give, all of that is pooled together and makes community radio possible. It's an amazing phenomenon. Be a part of it right now. 877-500-5266. This is your last chance to support public affairs programming during this drive. You've been putting it off. You've heard us calling for your support. You've been listening and you've heard those numbers a dozen times, 50 times, but you haven't made that call. Now is the time to make that call. Say yes. I support public affairs programming on KBOO. I support the information, the talk radio. I support Democracy Now!, the fact that you have local programmers producing content on a daily basis. Say yes to community radio right now. 877-500-5266. It's so important that you support this station. This is the way the station is funded. We don't have advertisers. We don't have big corporations backing us up. All we have is you, the listener, saying, yes, I can do it. I can give $60. I can give $80, $100, $500. All of that comes together. 877-500-5266. Now back to One Land, Many Voices.
You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. I am Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche, and joining us from Columbia, Maryland is Leila El-Haddad, author of The Gaza Kitchen.
Leila, the food that you have been talking about is totally delicious. The people are extremely resilient. But the situation in Gaza, as we all know, is brutal due to the siege imposed by Israel and the closing of the Egyptian border and tunnels by the Egyptian government. Paint for us a picture, if you will, a little bit of what life is like for average people in Gaza.
Yeah, definitely the situation is grim, and we don't intend to mask that reality in any way. We kind of hit it head on in the book. And like I said, we use the food to talk about what's going on and how basically you scratch the surface of any given topic and it opens up this entire can of worms, you know, when you are discussing a particular dish, and that leads you to ask, well, where do people get their olive oil from? And that leads you to discover that many of the groves have been raised to the ground, and half of Gaza's farmland, Gaza is a very green area, despite what, you know, might seem like in media images, half of that farmland is along the buffer zone on the border that has been raised, and that most people find olive oil prohibitively expensive and no longer use it, what used to be a traditional Palestinian staple. So, and on and on. And like you said, the current situation is quite grave in Gaza. And it goes through these cycles where, you know, at a certain period, there isn't necessarily a media outcry. Things seem to be okay as okay goes in Gaza, which just means that it's a return to a status quo where there is still a closure, there are still travel restrictions, but it's nothing so dire to warrant the media going, oh no, you know, Gaza. And so it's always kind of and this really horrible status quo. When I was there in June, I was able to get in because the Rafah crossing was actually open under the Morsi administration of Egypt. They, you know, reopened it again. I use that word kind of lightly because it was just less closed. When I say open, it was still not completely open to people that don't have Israeli-approved ID cards to students, to young people, to foreigners. After I left and after the coup in Egypt in June, things got much worse again. So as you mentioned, the Rafah crossing is closed much of the time. When it is open, it's open to limited numbers and kinds of people. And at the same time, the Israelis have again restricted access to the commercial crossings leading into Gaza. Because what people have to realize is, you know, whether it's or not it's making the news, there's always every single entry point in and out of Gaza for people and for goods, meaning commercial crossings and land crossings and routes, is controlled by outside entities. Even though Israel disengaged from Gaza in 2005 and dismantled its settlements, it retained control over Gaza's sovereignty, over Gaza's airspace, sea space, land space, and border crossings, and in the case of Rafah crossing, jointly with Egypt, because it's still sort of Israeli governing principles that manage that crossing. And so people can't decide whether they want to export something, except in very, you know, limited cases. They can't decide what they want to import. They have certain things and lists, and, you know, certain things might be allowed in 1 month, then they won't be. The Rafah crossing is operating, I think I was reading the UN reports yesterday, at a 29% of what it was working in, operating a few months earlier. So there's always, basically in the end of the day, in a nutshell, there's always this element of precariousness and vulnerability, and sort of the never knowing associated with the crossings. And that, of course, is very difficult in a business sense, to be able to make any predictions or know what you want to get in or out. And it's really difficult for students who get scholarships, who need to go get visas. There's no embassies in Gaza. So yeah, it's very psychologically, you know, suffocating, of course, knowing that every single step of the way, everything is being controlled. But, you know, again, people endure. I mean, one image that comes to mind that I usually like to show is that of an olive farmer I met in northern Gaza who was, you know, watering his little olive saplings, you know, really quietly, happy. And I was starting a conversation with him, and he told me it was the third time he had replanted these olive trees. And everyone knows olives take a very long time to become productive. And he said, this is the way that I resist. This is the only choice that I have. I can't, if I just decide not to replant and to leave my land, then they've won. And so that's the kind of spirit that you see in Gaza and elsewhere, you know, in the Palestinian territories.
You know, Layla, for many Palestinians, when CNN aired that programming of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, it was a watershed moment for us because, you know, it has been so difficult to get mainstream media to cover, as you noted in the beginning of this program. It's been so hard to get mainstream media to cover Palestine in a human way rather than in terms of the conflict. So it was really quite refreshing and almost just validating of the whole Palestinian identity to have this foodie, Anthony Bourdain, talk about Palestine, just say the word Palestine on CNN and walk around Gaza and the West Bank and talk to real people about their lives and their food and their culture. Can you tell us how that happened, where... if you know, what your experience was with Anthony Bourdain and how you felt walking around Gaza, talking about Gaza with him?
Yeah, absolutely. I've gotten that feedback from a lot of people, and I'm really quite pleased, because I wasn't sure, you know, what in the end the episode would look like and how people felt about it. So I'm happy. I mean, not with everything, obviously, but I have been hearing a lot that it was kind of unprecedented. And that's really a sad statement, but it's true, to have such human coverage of Palestinians on mainstream American television. But, you know, essentially they were interested in shooting an episode in Palestine as much as, I think, 2 years ago or more maybe, and when they were still on the Travel Channel. The show was called No Reservations at that point. Okay. And it didn't work out. The Israelis actually didn't grant them a permit, and they were trying to keep it all hush-hush. And so then they moved to CNN, and they revisited the idea. And in the course of their research, you know, they really wanted to go to Gaza, because no one had ever done that before, in the sense of going there as either culinary or political tourists. They were having a lot of difficulty obtaining a permit. But in the course of, you know, researching if they get in, who should they talk to, they came across my name. And the book initially was not yet published, but we had articles written about it and we had a blog. They came across that as well, and somebody had suggested my name. So that's how the initial contact was made. And of course, we were thrilled. It couldn't have happened at a better time because, you know, we were just coming out with this book. And so when they did finally make it in, you know, I went over there and met them. And yeah, the rest is history, I guess. But it was really an incredible experience to be able to show this culinary giant my hometown and also to the world, right? To show it to the world and to be able to introduce them, take them into the private homes and kitchens of Palestinians was, I think, you know, it was a dream come true.
Seemed like he was really, he was surprised, it seemed, by a lot of the things he was observing, you know, and the people he was meeting. Did you get that sense
from
him?
He definitely told me, you know, off camera, how warm he felt Palestinians in Gaza were, how welcoming, how it was completely like nothing he'd ever seen before. And even he felt it was more welcoming than other areas of Palestine. No offense to other Palestinians.
Yeah, we won't. As a West Banker, we take no offense. We're happy. We're so happy that he traveled there.
And
thankful.
And he thought it was so much more interesting, and really, he just loved it there. So that was really, really nice.
One of the things that you talk about in your book that I found pretty fascinating was the fact that there is a lot of aid going into Gaza, of course. People are very poor.
Yeah.
And because of the siege, a lot of the agricultural production that Gaza used to be known for, Gaza, as most people know, used to export oranges and so many other products, much of that industry has been destroyed. And therefore, people have had to use the money that has come to them through aid to buy Israeli products that are dumped in the Gazan market. So in a sense, this aid becomes a subsidy for Israel. Would you explain how that works and the psychological as well as economic effect on the people of Gaza?
Absolutely. I mean, like you mentioned, it's sort of a very twisted system. And in a lot of ways, Gaza serves as a microcosm for understanding postmodern colonialism, in the sense that it's, you know, these kinds of things may be happening elsewhere. They're just magnified in Gaza because it's such a kind of gross example of this, because it's completely closed off. Like I said, they have no access to export or import or land or other kinds of ports to use. But yeah, you nailed it on the head. It's just so much aid at various times being dumped into Gaza, as though that's going to solve the problem. It's always like, if we can just dump enough food on them, then they won't complain, or we can stave off humanitarian crisis. But of course, you know, as I always like to point out, and what people always like to point out to me is that it's not foods, it's freedoms that people are concerned about, because food will find its way, if not through rations, then through the tunnels. That's not to say that people aren't relying on these rations, because something like 80% of the population there is either food insecure or close to becoming food insecure, meaning that they're almost, many people are completely, I think it's like 60% reliant on these food rations for their daily meals, or they're very close, much more are very close to becoming completely reliant, so they need some of that food. But, you know, again, what is the quality of these food rations? Not very good. They replace the very traditional grains that were once used, like borghul, the parboiled sun-dried wheat, or frika, the green wheat products, olive oil, you know, the fresh fruits and vegetables are not provided. So as you said, we notice that people will take these rations, they'll sell them at market, they'll use them to buy other things. And what are those other things? You know, there are products that, well, it did come in, I don't know now, processed cheeses and so forth through the tunnels, as well as Turkish products. But what's being allowed in through the formal commercial crossings, and this is actually something that dates back to the Paris Protocols of the Oslo Accords, Israel gives preference to their products, and they'll often hold Palestinian products for days or weeks at a time on the crossings until they spoil. They won't allow in Palestinian dairy. There's an agreement that they have to allow in certain amounts and kinds of Israeli products, and that's often what will be available in the market. And then, of course, it becomes this whole psychology for a lot of people of, well, those products are better there's better screening. There's, you know, and it's kind of this mentality of the colonized, right? And so in essence, the money they use to buy that is money that they've obtained through selling their aid rations. And then again, it will go to buy those Israeli products and end up back. And of course, the products themselves to start with, the rations, are actually purchased from, you know, by the aid organizations from Israel. So it all in the end ends up in the Israeli economy at like a 200-300% rate.
You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. I'm Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche, and joining us from Columbia, Maryland is Leila El-Haddad, author of the highly acclaimed book, The Gaza Kitchen. We're going to take a short break so you can hear from our friends at KBOO about how you can support One Land, Many Voices and the other great programming on this station. You're also going to hear about how you can get a copy of Leila El-Haddad's book with your pledge of support.
That's right. My name is Jen Davis. We're here on KBOO 90.7. You're listening to One Land, Many Voices. We're talking with Leila El-Haddad about her book, The Gaza Kitchen, which is a richly illustrated cookbook that explores the distinctive cuisine and food heritage in the area known as the Gaza District. And it explores the culture and heritage and history of, particularly prior to 1948, and that of the many refugees from elsewhere in Palestine who came to the Gaza Strip in 1948 and have been forced to stay there ever since. This is a great way to learn about the history and culture of an area through their food. You can get a copy for only $5 a month. Please pick up the phone. This is your last opportunity to support public affairs programming on KBOO. If you're a steady listener, we really depend on your support to bring this programming to you. We don't insult your intelligence. We're always looking for interesting and provocative and relevant information, bringing it to you. Now is your time to support it. 877-500-5266, or you can go to kboo.fm. Also coming up this morning on KBOO, we've got at 10, we're going to hear Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, we'll hear on Flashpoints about Santa Rosa, California sheriffs gunning down an unarmed Latino teen. And at 11, we'll hear about Corporate FM, the killing of local commercial radio. You know, coming up on November 3rd at the Hollywood Theater, we're showing a really fascinating film called KPFA on the Air. You can call and get tickets for that. With a $5 a month minimum pledge. And there's also going to be a panel discussion afterwards. It's really a surprising story about how community radio started, was started back about 1949 by a bunch of World War II pacifists who really wanted to make the world better. KBOO is all about that. We want to make the world better too. With your help, we do that. And we need your support at 877-500-5266 to do that. Where we're all working together, sharing information, sharing knowledge, bringing our community together, whether you're working on coal issues, teachers' rights, environmental rights, rights for women, civil rights. We need your help. We put out that information. We bond people together. And you can support that lifeblood that helps to bring our community together. KBOO 90.7. Call now at 877-500-5266. Or you can go online at kboo.fm. Or come down and visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We had lots of visitors yesterday. It was so fun. We will give you standing ovation when you walk in the door. Please come. 877-500-5266.
You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. I'm Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche, and we're joined by Leila El-Haddad, author of The Gaza Kitchen. Leila, you know, we haven't heard very much about your background. You've written a cookbook here, but you're a writer, a bloggist, and you've been reporting from Gaza on many different issues, including the internal conflict between Hamas and Fatah, as well as the disengagement, I put that in quotes, the Israeli disengagement from Gaza. And you've been raising awareness about the situation of the siege in Gaza for many years now. Could you tell us about what it's like working in Gaza as a writer and how that has affected you personally and your relationship with your husband, who I've read couldn't join you while you were working in Gaza.
Yeah, so I was, you know, myself a Palestinian, you know, born to parents from Gaza City who then migrated to the Gulf. So I was born in Kuwait and attended international schools abroad. And then, you know, on a yearly basis, we would return to Gaza to renew our identity documents, these documents that allowed us to return to Gaza that were issued by the Israelis. And, you know, the renewal process was controlled by the Israelis as well. So there was always this link and this confusion associated with, you know, the homeland and all the different, you know, rules and regulations. And it was, you know, a pretty miserable commute, you know, to have to go back. But my mother did that, wanted to make sure that we retained connection and that we had the ability to go back whenever we wanted. You know, I should mention that this document, the Israelis only gave it to Palestinians who were physically present in 1967 when they occupied the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and East Jerusalem. So someone like my husband, who I met in graduate school in Boston in 2001, he is a Palestinian refugee, a native of Haifa, and was raised in a refugee camp in Lebanon. And as a refugee, he doesn't have the ability to return to his homeland. He's denied that right by the Israelis. But worse, he's not allowed to visit my hometown, Gaza. So the Israelis also ban him and others from entering the Gaza Strip or being able to apply for a family reunification permit. So I can't add him to my identity documents to allow him to visit. So the effect that this has, not just on our family, but on, you know, scores of other Palestinian families, is it's completely divides and interrupts and violates the social structure. And that's why you hear the Israeli policies being referred to as apartheid-like policies, because they really do intend to separate and control Palestinians from each other and from the outside world. So there's different identity documents issued to Palestinians in Gaza than those to the West Bank and those to East Jerusalem. And then the Palestinians on the outside, who number more than the Palestinians on the inside, by the way. For example, in 2003, I had the opportunity to go back to Gaza. I was in the United States at the time to work as a journalist for Al Jazeera. And, you know, I made the move with much trepidation because I was pregnant with our first child. And Yassin, my husband, I knew he wouldn't be able to come with me. So then I began the journey of commuting back and forth from Gaza across the Rafah crossing when and if it was open, through Egypt to the Cairo airport, to Boston, and back every few months. And it was that formed the basis, the content of my blog, Raising Yusuf, which would then later become Gaza Mom, which is, you know, was then later turned into a book, was kind of exploring, was a diary of that journey as a Palestinian, as a Palestinian mother, as a Palestinian journalist, and what it was like to endure all of that, and to explain that it's these experiences, these sort of ordinary, everyday moments, they're the ones that constitute the backdrop of daily Palestinian existence, and that they, you really need to understand those moments to understand the Palestinian struggle.
Do you think that you write because you're Palestinian? I think that so many of us feel like we don't have a voice, that it almost we fall into professions that will give us an opportunity to give voice to our identity. Do you think that that might have played some role in how you ended up writing?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, for sure, we always saw these people, these talking heads that were supposed to represent us. I remember growing up thinking, like, who is this person? That's not, you know, how I feel, or that's not who I chose. Or so for sure, there was, and it was, you know, particularly the absence of female voices, that was important to me. So who knows if I, like, actively, consciously decided this is what I want, or it just was always in my subconscious and it just happened, you know? And there were, I definitely remember, and yeah, and still do, always feeling kind of hesitant and that I'm somehow speaking on behalf of others, you know? I mean, I present my voice and my story, and I try to speak as accurately as I can on behalf of others, but in the back of my mind, it's always this voice saying, yes, but, you know, you don't have it as bad as XYZ, and, you know, who are you to sit here and talk about? So, you know, it took a while to kind of come to terms with that and to be able to just say, look, this is me. I'm talking about the singular Palestinian experience. It's one of, you know, a multitude of experiences, but, you know, it's a beginning to understand, to be, you know, and I do feel, okay, I have an obligation maybe as someone who has been given more opportunity to use that opportunity to be able to contribute an important voice and narrative, even if it's not the whole narrative, you know?
Layla, it's been a joy. Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you in Portland.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, we'll meet you. Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye.
This is One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. I'm Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche, and joining us from Columbia, Maryland this morning is Layla El-Haddad, author of The Gaza Kitchen. We're going to take a short break so you can hear from our friends at KBO about how you can support One Land, Many Voices and all the great programming on this station. You're also going to hear from our friends about how you can get a copy of Layla Haddad's book, which you can find at justworldbooks.com.
Thanks, and we want to hear from you as you listen to this compelling program. It took CNN up until this month to do a story on the human side of the Palestinians. In KBOO, we've been humanizing Palestinians since 1968, 45 years now. This is the reality at KBOO. We tell the human side, the culture, the reality of life for people on the other side, people who you don't get to hear from on the mainstream media. If you support that idea, the fact that we have a community radio station here in Portland, pick up your phone right now and call 877-500-5266. This morning we had a bit of a rally. It slowed down a little bit, and we want to get $2,000 more. I think we can get over $100,000 by noon. I think we can do that with your support. And that way, that last $25,000 we have to raise, we don't have to leave it all up to the Bluegrass supporters tomorrow. If you support public affairs programming, if you support news, the fact that you get information on KBOO, dial right now, 877-500-5266. If you support the Bluegrass, go ahead and call right now, 877-500-5266. If you're listening, we know that you're smart, you're educated, you are somebody who's beautiful, you are an amazing person because you listen to KBOO, and we know that that you're just waiting for that right moment. Well, wait no longer. This is the last day to support public affairs programming during this membership drive. So if you have been procrastinating, now is the time to take a moment, stop, pull your phone out, and dial that number, 877-500-5266. I think we can get over $100,000 if all of us come together, if we can just get 10 people giving $200, 20 people giving $100 a year, or maybe 40 people giving $50 a year. All of us come together. In the next 2 hours, I think we can do that. 877-500-5266.
And we want to thank the restaurants that have donated food for our volunteers today. Eclectic Kitchen, 4936 Northeast Fremont Street. Vita Cafe, 3203 Northeast Alberta Street, and Di Nicola's Restaurant on 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. This is your opportunity if you're interested in getting this richly illustrated cookbook about the culture and cuisine in an area known as the Gaza District prior to 1948. Now is the time to make the call. KBOO Community Radio is all about the community. You know, every single penny that comes in, we stretch to the very max. Your money is not wasted. We have a tiny little staff. We put on programming 24 hours a day, 365 days a week, with 83% of our funding coming directly from individuals. So if you're thinking, well, my $20 or my $5 a month won't really make a difference, no, you make all the difference in helping to keep community radio on the air. Support it now by calling 877-500-5266, or you can go to kboo.fm, or come down and visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We just had a very lovely lady come in and give us money, and yes, we gave her a standing ovation, and we'll do that for you too. So please come and visit us, or call 877-500-5266.
KBOO loves you. KBOO is here for you. Maybe your group or your cause has gotten a voice on KBOO Community Radio. Now is the time to turn that around and say, I support community radio. I support this in my town, in my area. 877-500-5266. You know, the academic Noam Chomsky, known for his astute political analysis, said during a talk that he can tell from the questions that he gets from an audience when he's speaking whether or not a community has a community radio station, whether or not the city that he's speaking in has a community radio station, because the caliber of the questions that he gets in a community like Portland that has a community radio station is so much higher than in places where a community radio station is absent. It's so important to keep this on the air, to keep community radio coming to you. It's an effort that all of us pitch in. You know, you mentioned the restaurants, they're doing their part. Now it's time for you to do your part. Make this happen for another 45 years. This is our 45th birthday. And you could pick up Layla El Haddad's book, The Gaza Kitchen, A Palestinian Culinary Journey. This is part ethnography, part cookbook, and part political analysis, exploring the distinctive cuisine and food heritage of the Gaza Strip, the personal stories and history of its people by the great writer Layla El Haddad, who you've just been listening to. And do stay tuned. Air Cascadia is coming up next. This afternoon, DJ Peter Buck of REM is going to be on. And at 5 o'clock live, City Commissioner Amanda Fritz talking about the homeless encampment Right to Dream 2. So much exciting programming on this. The final day to support KBOO's News and Public Affairs during this membership drive. Now is the time. You've been waiting, you've been hearing it, you've been wondering, what is this and how can I support it? Well, you can support by dialing that number, 877-500-5266, and you choose the amount you give. $10 a month is a great amount, $5 a month, $40 basic membership, or $500, $1,000, whatever you can do. 877-500-5266.
This is One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. I'm Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche. Joining us has been Layla El Haddad, author of the highly acclaimed book, The Gaza Kitchen.
If you've enjoyed this show and found Layla interesting, there are many opportunities in the coming week to see her in person. On Friday, November 1st, Layla will come to Portland, along with Maggie Schmidt, her co-author. And the first event will be at the World Affairs Council. It's hosted by World Affairs Council and Slow Foods Portland. So November 1st at 5 o'clock at the Oregon Historical Society, Layla will be talking about the book, signing it, and we'll be having food as well as olive oil tastings provided by Canaan Fair Trade. Also on Saturday, we have a very special dinner happening at Hoda's Restaurant. That's Saturday, November 2nd, starting at 4 o'clock. Call for reservations, 503-236-8325. It's a special six-course dinner from the book itself, The Gaza Kitchen. Should be very special. And then in the evening, Saturday, November 2nd at 7:30 at Kairos Milwaukee UCC Church, David Rovics will be giving a concert. And during the intermission of that concert, Layla and Maggie will be there talking about the book, autographing the book, and again, we'll be sampling delicacies from the book and tastings of Canaan Fair Trade. This amazing tour that Layla and Maggie will be in Portland for is sponsored by many, many organizations. I want to mention just the key ones. Platinum sponsors for this are Hoda's Middle Eastern Restaurant, the Arab American Cultural Center of Oregon, and Canaan Fair Trade. If you'd like to purchase a copy of Layla and Maggie's book, you can do so at justworldbooks.com. Also, if you'd like to get it autographed by the authors, please come to any of the events I just described. On behalf of Zaha Hassan and myself, Ned Roche, it's been a joy to be with you this morning, speaking with Layla Haddad, the author of The Gaza Kitchen. See you next month for One Land, Many Voices.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:59 a.m. Coming up at 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoint, Santa Rosa, California sheriffs gun down an unarmed Latino teen, also fighting to free the prisoners at Guantanamo. Vets put their lives on the line with a series of life-threatening hunger strikes in solidarity with prisoners. And The Ghosts of Jeju Island, a powerful new documentary on the struggle against the building of a giant military base in South Korea. At 11, hear about Corporate FM, the killing of local commercial radio. That's all coming up this morning on your source for progressive talk radio and all sorts of news, music, arts and culture, 90.7 FM, KBOO. Stay tuned.
Corporate media got you feeling blue. Listen up, we got an answer for you. Starts with a K, it ends with a boo. KBOO, so what you gonna do? We got your music, your news, we speak truth to power. In touch with your community each hour by the hour. 24/7, every day of the year. Since 1968, KBOO has been here. We're all independent, no ads, no corporate bucks. We're not afraid to say that this government sucks. KBOO's your station for freedom of speech. 99%, all for one and one for each. Come on, jump in. This is your station, too. Call now. Become a member. You know what to do. It's time to support your station. KBOO, 503-232-8818. And watch this movement accelerate.
That's right. You can make this movement accelerate right now by dialing 877-500-5266. We have, I'm going to be really honest with you, $27,000 to go. That means that we have raised $98,000. That is awesome. Now, we just have $27,000 to go. We are so close. We're within spitting distance of our goal. We just need you to pick up the phone to help us reach it. 877-500-5266. It's amazing how people have come together to support this station during this drive. $98,000 is great. We need $27,000 more, and I think we can do it. We can do it with you, the listener, right now. You've been listening to this programming. You've been maybe turning on KBOO now and then. Maybe you've just turned it on for the first time, and you're amazed by what you hear. You think, this is an incredible station. This is a station that's opened its doors to the community, and you want to support it. Well, you can do it right now. 877-500-5266. You could do what I do. I give an hour's wage a month. That's, for me, $14. So if you make $14 an hour, maybe give $14 a month. If you make $10 an hour, maybe you could give $10.